think sometimes it's important to maybe write something on the board. Kind of helps me stay on task and gives us a reference point. But there's a lot of things that could be used as a title or a common denominator amongst a message. So I want to tell you a little bit about what I've been thinking about this week. All the days of, if you type that into your search engine and you're searching in the scripture, you'll find that phrase is in the scripture quite a bit. It's used in various different ways. Two primarily. One is that says something in all the days of a name and or a people. Then there's a blessing or a consequence that's prescribed. But I'm interested today about the way this phrase is used multiple times in the scripture, and it seems to indicate that the end of the days of the particular individual, that circumstances changed. I'd like to look beginning at very common scripture in Joshua, the 24th chapter. And we know that in the first part of this chapter, Joshua had called the people together and was challenging them to serve the Lord. And that's where he said, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And, you know, I don't believe that would have happened just like that. I don't believe we would have that verse, the 15th verse of the 24th chapter. I don't believe we'd have that verse in the Bible if everything was going like Joshua hoped it would. I believe that there was a lot of evidence that people weren't really worshiping the Lord with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength at that time. And Joshua had this day of reckoning or accountability. He had assimilated the people and read to them and related to them what God had done for them in bringing them out of Egypt and restoring them and establishing them as a nation, because now there was 600,000 men plus the women and children in the mixed multitude that left Egypt. And he had brought us all the way through the Red Sea and the wilderness and had given us the promised land. And people were allowing the focus of their what should have been their life to crumble away. And he brought them together and he said, listen, we got to get on track. We got to stay on track. It's for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And I believe he had a real a burden, if you will. He had a real concern about the disintegration, about the defection, about the devaluing that was happening for a real relationship with God and being true to the God of heaven that had done so much for them. I think that Joshua had a lot of disappointment in his life, and I think he was there at the he was one of the spies. He was there at the crossing of the Jordan River. He was there to see the walls come down, and there had been a lot of people that had been born and a lot of people that had passed on since that time. And he saw the erosion of the reverence that there should have been for the God of heaven. And he made this effort to try to re-inspire the people. And you might say he drew a line in the sand. He said, "It's for me and my house. This is what we're going to do." He was not willing to make a compromise. And we look at Joshua as this mighty hero and man of God. And he was. He really was. I don't notice, though, this morning, the 31st verse. And it said, "And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, in all the days of the elders that overlived Joshua, which had known all the works of the Lord that he had done for Israel." All the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that overlived Joshua. All the people that were there when they crossed the Jordan River. All the people that had some experiences in the wilderness, those that were 20 years old and younger when the spies came back and the Israelite nation had said, "Oh, we're too afraid to go." All of that generation, how old were they? I would say these elders were anywhere from probably 60 to 80 years old. I don't know. How old is it say that Joshua was? Um, 110 years old. And if he was, I believe he was a grown man when they left Egypt. And maybe he was 30 years old when they went in. And they went wandering around in the wilderness for 40 years, and then they come into Canaan land when he was 70 to 80 years old, and so this is another 30 years. I'm just trying to put this all in a time of 30 years of being in the promised land. You know, a lot can happen in 30 years. A lot of change has happened in the last 30 years in our nation as far as godliness or godlessness. A lot of things has happened in the last 30 years. Today, this week, I was sitting at lunch with one of my coworkers, and he said, "Dan, how long has it been that..." And he started naming off something that he had observed. "How long has it been that this section of the people has been like this?" And I said, "Well, it's certainly been in my lifetime. It's certainly been, you know, in my time of being an adult. I've seen this drift in this direction." So there would have been a real drift going on. And it sounds like that, you know, when Joshua said, "It's for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." And the people, you remember what they said back then in the 16th verse, "We will too. We'll do that too." And you know, I believe, what was their motivation for saying "we will too"? I believe they respected Joshua. I believe they respected those that had been in the wilderness. We're talking about a generation that come along and they knew nothing about manna from their own perspective. They knew nothing about wandering around in the wilderness. They didn't know anything about the land on the other side of the Jordan. All they knew was the promised land. This is where they were born. This is where they were raised. These were adults. You know, it'll just be a few years and we'll have not just little children sitting on an altar bench saying memory verses, but we'll have a group of teenagers. Just a few years. It won't be long. And then there's those times of there'll be weddings, things, there'll be new little family nucleuses. It's right around the corner. It is from my perspective anyway, because that's the way I've seen it happen. I've already been through this once. And you know, they said as long as Joshua was alive and as long as those that had seen the wilderness, they served the Lord. And you don't have to read very much more. Turn the page. And you find out that the people stopped doing what Joshua did. Let's turn to Judges, the second chapter, and begin reading in the verse 7. And it says, "And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he had did for Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old, and they buried him in the border of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres in the mount of Ephraim on the north side of the hill Gaash. And also all the generations that were gathered unto their fathers, and there arose another generation after them, which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel." So how does another generation arise, come into power, come into leadership? How does another generation come along that it says here, which knew not the Lord? How does that happen? After it said, all, you know, that the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders. And then we have a generation that did something different. How did you have close association with Joshua and the folks that were a generation or so younger than him? How did you have association with them and not know the Lord? I don't know. It's a puzzle to me. Was it just the next generation, or was it two or three generations later? How is it that the ones, do we have to have the dramatic experience of going through the Red Sea or going through the Jordan River or seeing the manna come down from heaven or the water come out of the rock? Do we have to have that to be true to the Lord? I'm asking us today, do we have to have those dramatic type experiences before we'll believe? You know, when the man that, you know, had the sores that the dogs licked, and when the rich man went to heaven went to hell, and Lazarus went to be in Abraham's bosom, and the rich man's request was that someone would go back and warn his family. And they told him, no, it can't happen that way. You can't go back. They've got the law. They've got the prophets. They've got the word. But we're not going to go back and give them. If someone come in here tonight or today that was from a past generation of being in this congregation, well, that'd be kind of startling, wouldn't it? If someone... those that some of us here have known, Sister Vicky's parents, if they were to come in to our service, Brother and Sister Hill, if they were to come in, don't you think that'd be a startling experience, wouldn't it? But do we have to have something like that to get a hold of the Lord? I think you're right, Brother David. I don't think we have to have that. But many times before people really get a hold of the Lord, they have to have that experience. I don't want the next generation to have to. You know, we have this thing about us that we don't want the next generation to experience the hardship that we experienced. All of us have that tendency. You know, if we see somebody fixing to make a mistake, what do? Our children. You know, if they're playing with something sharp, or if they're playing with something that could burn them, or if they could fall out of the... if they could fall off of the edge of the roof. I mean, if you take your little boy up on the roof and he wants to get up there and he wants to help you put the the flashing on the stovepipe, or he wants to help you put the shingles on, or whatever it is, do you just take him up there and say, take off, do what you want to do? We don't do that, do we? We say, stay right here. Don't get close to the edge. And we give them all these warnings and precautions about how to navigate a roof. And if they're climbing up a tree, we don't just sit back and say, I wonder how this is going to turn out. You know, I remember falling out of a tree. I remember as a boy climbing up in a tree, tying a rope between, please don't get any ideas, boys. Because here I'm trying to give you some cautions right now, but I remember a rope and a tree, and we tied a rope between two limbs, and then we started to try to tightrope walk up in the tree. FYI, don't do this. And I fell out. And I went headfirst out of the tree and hit my cheek. I still got a scar if you look just right. I got a scar on my cheek where I fell out headfirst, hit a cut-off branch, and I thought I poked one of my eyes out. I couldn't see for probably an hour or so out of one of my eyes. Don't do that. You know, if I see a boy climbing up in a tree with a rope, you know what? Immediately what I think about is my experience. And we try to caution them, don't do that. But many times we don't really get serious about our relationship with the Lord until we've had a dramatic event in our life. And I'm convinced that it's possible to be serious about our relationship with the Lord without having a near-death experience. And I want to foster an environment where you can do that. That's why we come to service. That's why we have Sunday school. That's why we teach. That's why we preach. That's why we encourage one another. But yet we see this example of the Israelites and Joshua and the people that went on before him. I'd like to turn our attention to the 18th chapter, or 18th verse, this same chapter, second chapter of Judges. And it says, and when the Lord raised them up judges, then the Lord was with the judge and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For it repented the Lord because of their groanings by reason of them that oppressed them and vexed them. So the setting here is this. After Joshua and the elders passed away, all the days of them, they did pretty good. But once the one that had their hand on the rudder, the ones that had their hand on the steering wheel, we might say today, the ones that had the guidance or the oversight, once they slipped away, whether it was one generation or two, they went to doing things they ought to know better. They ought to know better than to walk around with something dangerous and go running over rough terrain, you know? And they got in trouble, and the Lord sent a judge somebody that got inspiration from the Lord, one that was willing to yield himself to the Lord. And it says here that the Lord used them, this judge, to deliver them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. And the whole book of Judges is about that. This one rose up, then that one, then another one. And every time there was a judge that arose in Israel or for the people, it was because they were in a terrible situation. And there was they were crying, "Have mercy on us. We're being overcome. We've become subjects to the people of the land that they ought to have been subjects over." Every one of us here this morning, I don't care how young we are or how old we are, we all have a golden opportunity to get established to live victorious the rest of our life. The youngest child that don't even understand what I'm talking about this morning, to the oldest one here, we all have this golden opportunity to cultivate a relationship. We have information, we have opportunity to know people, to know the scripture, to listen to messages. There has never been a time in my lifetime that we've had more accessibility. You don't like to listen to me preach? Go to Church of God preaching. There's somebody else you can listen to, and you can get the same stuff. You can get the same truth. You can get the same revelation. You can get it. We have absolutely no excuse for going astray. And the people, they had all of this opportunity under Joshua and those that had experienced those dramatic events to learn what it was like to be pleasing to the Lord and how to practice their devotion to God, how to cultivate a relationship, how to be faithful. They knew what to stay away from. They knew that they weren't to worship idols. It was not something hid in the dark. It wasn't something that was obscure. They knew they shouldn't worship Baal. They knew they shouldn't worship these other gods. They knew they shouldn't sacrifice their children to Moloch. They knew all of that. But why? What was it that caused them to go astray? Well, it's the same thing today. What causes people to choose a path that is not the path they ought to follow? Well, best I can tell, it's because they're led away because of some other desire besides really being sincere. Let's turn to 1 Samuel, the 7th chapter, and notice the 13th verse. 1 Samuel chapter 7, and the 13th verse. It says, "So the Philistines were subdued." Well, let's back up a little bit. Let's start with 11. We could read a lot more, but let's start with 11. "And the men of Israel went out of Mizpah and pursued the Philistines and smote them until they came into Bethcar. Then Samuel took a stone and set it between Mizpah and Shin and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, 'Hitherto hath the Lord helped us.'" What caused them to get to this place? They were in trouble. They had strayed away from the Lord, and Samuel, acting as a judge, had interceded, and the Lord had gave him instruction, and he had passed it on to them, and the men of Israel were able to be victorious. And now he set up a rock, and he says, "We're going to call this Ebenezer, which means 'Hitherto hath the Lord helped us.'" Maybe I've paraphrased that too much, but you get the message. And the next verse says, So the Philistines were subdued, and they came no more into the coast of Israel. And the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. All the days of Samuel, the Philistines were at a disadvantage. Were there other examples of the Philistines coming and contesting Israel in the days of Samuel? Yes. With Saul. That's where Goliath came from. But were they able to stand? No, they weren't. They weren't able to succeed in overpowering Israel because Samuel was there. All the days of Samuel, the Philistines had a disadvantage because of Samuel. Then what happened after the days of Samuel? Just exactly what happened in the days after Joshua passed on. It came to a point that the people turned aside from Samuel's direction. And they got in trouble, and the Philistines were able to have free reign. Oh, and there's an account in 2 Chronicles that makes my heart cry. In 2 Chronicles, the 24th chapter, we have a story of Joash. You ever heard that name before? You children heard of Joash? You know who he was? He's a little boy. I don't know. We've got some children here this morning that's about 8 years old. I wonder if you're a little boy 8 years old this morning, or about 8 years old, how would you like to be king? I don't mean just an imaginary king. I mean really king. Does that sound pretty good? Does it sound exciting? I'd have to think that in your wildest dreams, you can't think of anything any more fantastic than to be a king. So let's read a little bit. 2 Chronicles chapter 24, verse 1. Joash was 7 years old. Anybody here 7 this morning? When he began to reign. And he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Zibiah of Beersheba. And Joash did that which was right in the sight of the Lord all of the days of Jehoiada the priest. Now, with what I've already read to you and what I've already explained to you this far, how long, or what do you think is coming? Joash was a little boy at 7 years old. And we can read, don't necessarily intend to read all of the process of how he became king and why he became king at 7 years old. But he says he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. You know, 7 year olds this morning, you don't have much opportunity to do the things that's not right. Right? Because you have parents. And your parents will tell you when you're not doing things right. Right? I think I'm right. I think that if you're 7 years old, 7 or 8 years old this morning, and you started to build a fire in the living room, I think your parents would say, no, you're not. If you started carrying in leaves and sticks and maybe some paper, and then you ask your parents for a match, or you got the rummaging around where you knew the matches were, I don't want to instigate problems for parents. I'm trying to paint this picture for all of us, especially our little children this morning. You know, your parents are going to make sure you're doing what's right. And as long as you live at home, the Lord give you parents for a reason, is to keep you on the right path, going the right direction. And I'm thankful that I had parents, because if I hadn't had parents and I was just allowed to do what I wanted to do, I would not be here today. I would have done something that was overly dangerous, and it would have taken my life. I know it would have, because I didn't have the wherewithal to direct my path. But I had parents that could somehow detect when I was getting dirty and they were in the house. My mother was, I don't know, it was like she had a drone before there was such a thing that could watch me. My mother was very perceptive. And, you know, one of her old adages was, if the children are real quiet, you probably ought to go check on them, because something's fixing to happen. And here it says that Joash was 7 years old, and he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. And Jehoiada the priest was his, was like his stepfather. It was the man that had oversight in his life. He was an uncle, I believe. So let's read down about verse 14. And it says here, Joash, because of the guidance and the instruction and the direction of Jehoiada the priest, he got a real vision for restoring the temple, because the Israel was in a bad state of affairs. And he wanted to collect the funds it needed, and he wanted to rebuild and restore the temple. And I'm so thankful for children that want to be pleasing to parents, and they love their parents, and they're following the direction of their parents. I'm thankful for adults that are willing to follow those that maybe have some spiritual oversight and trying to teach and preach the right things in a congregation. I believe that's profitable. I believe it's beneficial. And we can see those that get behind the burden, if you will. One person with a vision and others get behind and they're willing to help, and great progress can be made. And great progress had been made here. Verse 14 says, and when they had finished it, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada, whereof were made vessels for the house of the Lord, even vessels to minister and to offer withal, and spoons and vessels of gold and silver, and they offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord continually all the days of Jehoiada. Here again, all the days of Jehoiada, they followed and did the right thing. But what happened after the days of Jehoiada? What happened after? That's the context of our message this morning, is what happened after that. And this wasn't two or three generations later or one generation later. This was in the age, in the lifespan of Joash, a little boy that became king at 7 or 8 years old. Let's go down and read a little more. The 17th verse. Now after the death of Jehoiada came the princes of Judah and made obeisance to the king. Then the king hearkened unto them, and they left the house of the Lord God of their fathers and served groves and idols, and wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for this their trespass. In his lifetime. So I want to tell you a little thing that I observed in my life. As a young man, I witnessed something happen. a witness, a woman, that seemed she was the daughter of a pastor. And she seemed to really have a vision. She, I believe, had a lot of respect for her parents. I believe Joash had a lot of respect for Jehoiada. This woman had a lot of respect for her parents, but it seemed that she really had it for herself. I think if you were there in those years, that Joash did all that was right in the sight of the Lord, you would have thought Joash really had it for himself too. And you would have thought, Joash, you are setting a course here for the future. For the generations to follow, there's going to be a trend towards the Lord. And you know, I would have said the same thing about this woman. It seemed like she would lead the singing in the service. And she was involved in a great extent in helping the cause of the local congregation all the days of her mother. All the days of her mother. Her mother passed away, a saint of God, by the way. And after her mother passed away, I saw this happen. She quit leading the singing. She quit coming to service. She divorced her husband. She's still alive today. And I pray that God will have mercy on her soul. But all the time that I thought, she really had it for herself. I don't know what was going on. But after all the days of her mother, it fell apart. You know, I think if we would have looked on Joash, we would have said, Joash, you're an astounding example of a righteous king. Oh, you've restored the temple. You've changed so many things for the good. But it don't end there. That after Jehoiada died, that some came and convinced him to do it. I don't know what convinced this woman to go the other way. I wonder today, was she just doing it for her mama? Was she doing it because she had a relationship and she didn't have the depth that she really ought to have? I don't know. I don't know what came along. But it wasn't just that I saw this from a distance. I had some experience with this person. I was disappointed. And I want to tell you, it's really put an alarm in my soul. I better have it. I could be righteous all the days, and you can put the name in there, all the days of my dad, all the days of my mother, all the days of my pastor, all the days of uncle or aunt or whatever. I could be faithful to everyone's observation all the days of, but what about happens after Jehoiada died, after mama dies, after the pastor dies, after something that influence that seemed to be the stabilizing, guiding force. Now what are you going to do? I'd like to go down to verse 20, this same chapter. It says, and the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada. You remember that name? Jehoiada was the one that took Joash in as a little boy, treated him as his son, guided him, trained him, taught him, revealed to him the plan that God had for him to use him to reestablish the kingdom under David's rule, because his grandmother, a wicked person, had assumed the leadership of the nation, and she shouldn't even ever been in that position. And it says, the Spirit of the Lord came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada the priest, which stood above the people, and said unto them, thus saith God, why transgress ye the commandments of the Lord that ye cannot prosper? Because ye have forsaken the Lord, he hath also forsaken you. Now, stop and think about this a minute. Zechariah, I don't know what the age difference between him and Joash were, but they quite possibly were raised as siblings in the same house, the same influence. One of them seemed to get a hold of God for themselves, and the other one didn't. I don't know how else to spell it out, but that's what it seems like. One of them really had a hold of the Lord, and one of them didn't. Both this event is happening after Jehoiada, the one that kept everything in line. Jehoiada, the man of God that everybody respected, is gone now. And Joash and Zechariah are left to carry on. And he got the people together and he said, why are you doing this? Why are you leaving the path that God will bless? Why are you doing the things you know that will cause us trouble? And they conspired against him and stoned him with stones at the commandment of the king in the court of the house of the Lord. Right in the yard of the chapel. They stoned Zechariah because the king said, good, do it. And they stoned him. Thus Joash the king remembered not the kindness of Jehoiada his father had done to him, but slew his son. And when he died, he said, the Lord look upon it and require it. Do you think Joash ended up very good? Let's look down one more verse here on this. Verse 25. Enemies came in, besieged him, left him in a bad state of affairs. It says, and when they were departed from him, for they left him in great diseases. You think he, I don't know, I couldn't find anything that anybody said of this, but I just wonder if he didn't have some personal diseases besides political distress and the other enemies coming again. It says, his own servants conspired against him for the blood of the sons of Jehoiada the priest and slew him on his bed, and he died. And they buried him in the city of David, but they buried him not in the sepulchers of the kings. You think about that. You know, when Joash became king, little boy, 7, 8 years old, grew into a young man, you think by the time he was 20, I don't know how long Jehoiada lived, maybe by the time he was 30, everybody would point to him and say, you know, the Lord has restored Israel. Look at this man that God has that has done so much for us as a nation. Led us in the right direction. You know, there was no chance at that point that they would have done anything less than bury him in the sepulcher of the kings. But because when Jehoiada died, all the days of Jehoiada, he did the right thing. And afterwards, he didn't. Ezekiel chapter 22, verse 30 says, I sought for a man among them that should make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me in the land, that I should not destroy it, but I found none. Some of you adults here have parents that's still alive. Parents that are like Jehoiada. Got both feet on the ground. Got their eye on the goal. That are living in a way that you can follow safely. Some of you don't have parents alive. Some of you don't have parents of Jehoiada's caliber. What are you going to do when those like Jehoiada, like Samuel, like Joshua and the elders, what are you going to do when they pass on? You little children, I believe today that you have parents. It's got both feet soundly on the ground. I believe you got parents that's leading you and guiding you in the right way. And this message is probably not one you'll remember. But your parents will. What are you going to do when the pastor's gone? When dad's gone? When mom's gone? You're going to be like the woman I knew. Turned your life the wrong way. Are you going to be like Joash? Or when it come your time to leave this earth, you left in shame? Are you going to be like the man that Ezekiel was looking for? He's looking for someone to stand in the gap and make up the hedge. The Lord is looking for that in every generation. He's looking for somebody besides a Joash. Oh, I want to say, Joash, why? You had such a good opportunity. You had it handed to you. You didn't earn the right to be king other than you was born in the right family. You didn't have to fight the battles for yourself. There's battles that parents fight to keep the enemy at bay for your little children. There's battles my parents fought and got the victory on, then handed me something. And I want to be somebody that stands in the gap. I want to take it from what they handed me, and I want to add to it. Not that I can live a better life, but I want to do more with it. I want them to make more progress. I want it to make more of an impact in the world that we live in. I don't want to be a Joash. My parents are both gone. My natural parents. But those that's ahead of me, in worshiping the Lord, what am I going to do when they're gone? We're going to start embracing something that they wouldn't have embraced. Lord, help us to not be a Joash, but help us to be a man that Ezekiel was looking for, to stand in the gap and make up the hedge. You pray for me.